thank you for so kindly coming today to attend the festival of Sri Radha Gopinath. Every Sunday, we come together to help nourish the remembrance of our real purpose in life. Lord Kapila Dev told his mother, Devahuti, that all the scriptures, all their instructions, philosophy, logic, histories, are all meant ultimately to bring us to the conclusion, which is the essence of all knowledge, to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. In the association of devotees, it is not only easy to remember Krishna, but it is a most joyful experience. Because the world we live in, whoever we may be, it is full of disappointments, heartbreaks, inconceivable reversals, and also there's some happiness and pleasure. But where is there a permanent shelter? It is only in the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Therefore, intelligent, great souls have taken shelter of those lotus feet in all circumstances of life. At the time of initiation, we chant mantra, Om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopiva yasmaret pundarikaksam sabhaya vyantarasuchi. That whether one is pure or impure, or even passing through all various circumstances of life, that means successes and failures, happy moments and tragedies, good news and bad news, health and sickness, honor and dishonor, even having passed through all circumstances of life, one who remembers the beautiful lotus-eyed personality of Godhead is purified from within and without. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared the cleaning of the heart. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared the cleaning of the heart to the cleaning of Gundicha Temple. If we want to actually have the Lord reveal himself within our hearts, first the heart, which is temple, the mind, which is meant to be the temple of the Lord, must be perfectly cleansed. And what is the process of cleaning the heart? According to the laws of nature, what we associate with, we take on those qualities. Even in the physical sense, if you come in contact with dirty things, what happens? You become dirty. If a child is rolling in the mud, he becomes full of mud. If a child is coming in contact with fresh, clean water and natural soap, then the child becomes completely clean physically. So it is very logical. What we contact ourselves with, we become affected by that. And internally as well. according to the modes of nature we associate with, we become affected. We take on those qualities. But how? How to perfectly clean the temple of the heart? By always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. Because Krishna is all pure. He is supremely pure. Today, this extraordinary darshan of Sri Gopal is depicting him taking the form of an infant little baby lying on the leaf of a banyan tree, sucking upon his own toe. Such a beautiful pastime. I'd like to read a passage from Srimad Bhagavatam in this regard. It is being spoken by Devahuti, the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as Lord Kapila Dev. He has just completed the most incredibly philosophical presentation of the Sankhya philosophy. Within the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the cream of all Vedic literatures, this particular section is very highly technical and scientific in its presentation of material nature, of the soul, of God, of time, of karma, and the relationships between all of these five principles. He's speaking this very, very deep philosophy of Sankhya to his mother, who is actually in quite a desperate condition. She was born the daughter of Swayambhu Manu. Therefore, she was a princess. And her father, out of great love for her, arranged for her to marry Kardama Muni, who was living in the jungles without any home or any concern for any bodily needs. And she was so chaste and so faithful that she just served her husband. She wouldn't eat until after her husband ate. And her husband, who was actually a very caring and concerned person, he would just get so absorbed in his meditation and samadhi, he would forget to eat. He would be so immersed for days and weeks at a time. This was her nature. Very difficult life. But ultimately, her husband wanted to please her. And because of the purity in her heart, Krishna awakened within her the desire to have a child. It wasn't a normal desire to have a child. Because those who are pure at heart, their desires become one with Krishna's desires. Prabhupada explains, this is the perfection of the famous word, oneness. We hear it often, to become one with God. Now, people who are on a preliminary state of transcendental awareness, their idea of becoming one with God is to merge into the existence of God, where there is no longer any differentiation between myself and God. I become God in this oneness. But here we find God himself, he's not content with that. He's sucking his toes. Why is he doing that? That's the mystery we're trying to understand today. The great devotees understand what the real perfection of this oneness is. We can never become one with God in all respects. Recently, my very dear godbrother Gurudas Prabhu was telling a story. It was around 1971. He had just recently come to India to assist Srila Prabhupada in promoting bhakti within this great land of India. And they were in Amritsar, in Punjab. They went there by train, and it was the winter. So for those of you who have been to Amritsar, it's quite cold in the winter, yes? It's very cold, and it was a cold night. And Gurudas Prabhu arranged accommodations for all the devotees. There was about 30 of devotees. And he arranged a hall for them all to sleep in. But after arranging everyone to lay down and go to sleep, there was no space for him or Giriraj Swami. So they just found in some area of this dharmashala just a room, and they just laid on the floor in the corner of the room. And Giriraj Swami went to sleep very nicely. The Gurudas Prabhu was still awake. And one sadhu, who apparently was a very learned person, he came up and wanted to expound his realization. He said, "When you become perfect, you will know that you are one with God." Hare Krishna. So Gurudas Prabhu said, "We are one with God in quality, but we can never become one with God in quantity. The spirit soul is Satchidananda. Why? Because it is Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. It is part and parcel of Krishna, who is Satchidananda vigraha." Lord Brahma prays in this way: "Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakaranakaranam." Like the ray of a sun is the same quality of the sun, radiating heat and light. In the same way, we are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But we are always a tiny little part, and Krishna is always the complete whole. And there's a difference between the part and the whole. There's the difference between the sun ray and the sun. There's a difference between a fire and a spark. Gurudas Prabhu told him, "You can't cook a meal with a spark, but you can cook with a fire." So there's a difference, although the fire and the spark are qualitatively the same. And he said, "No, qualitatively, quantitatively, in every respect, we are one with God." And then he had a blanket around him because he was very cold, this sadhu, and he took out a thread from the blanket. And he said, "You see, this thread and this blanket are one. There is no difference. The blanket only exists because of the thread, and the thread only exists because of the blanket. They are one." So Gurudas Prabhu, he became somewhat eager to convince him by logical means. So he grabbed that person's blanket right off his body, rolled it up, and made it into his own pillow, and said, "I'm going to sleep with your blanket." And then he took that one thread and said, "Here, you take this." And then he laid down and went to sleep. Nice wool pillow. And that person had his thread, and he was trembling and shivering and suffering all night long. Finally, he woke up Gurudas Prabhu. He woke him up and said, "I admit defeat. Give me my blanket back." Gurudas Prabhu said, "I'll give you the blanket back when you admit that defeat." "What is the defeat?" "That there is a difference between the thread and the blanket. The thread is only the part and parcel quantitatively, not one." He said, "I admit defeat. I accept. Give me my blanket." You see, this Mayavad philosophy is simply not practical. And then he gave him the thanket. And he said, thank you for enlightening me. And Guru Das Prabhu said, don't thank me. Thank my Guru Maharaj. He's the one who taught me this. And the next morning, the sadhu, with his blanket on, went to Prabhupada, bowed down, and thanked him very much. Arivo. So Prabhupada taught real oneness is the oneness of desire, the oneness of heart. When two people actually enter in the realm of love with one another, the oneness is in their loyalty and their desire to please and to serve one another. Just like marriage, it is considered that when a man and woman get married, they become one body. Yes? And in America, I don't know what they say in India, but in America they say the woman is the better half. Yes? So you become one body. Now everyone knows you don't actually become one body. I've seen in marriages in India where they tie the bride and the groom together, where they tie their cloths, yes? The knot, the hard knot. And brahmacharis have a whole philosophy about that knot. But we're not going to discuss that aspect of the subject matter. So the knot is tied. And they're supposed to actually stay tied together. But within a few minutes, you know, it's just not practical. Yes. I don't know, maybe in olden days they did it. But these days I haven't seen anyone maintain that knot for very long. They'll keep the knot, but they'll take off their clothes and put the knot somewhere else. So they're one. What is the idea of their being one? The idea is by taking their vows together, by their affection with to one another, they're one in spirit. They're one in their concern to lovingly care for each other. That is the ideal. That is called achintya bheda bheda tattva. Inconceivable oneness and diversity. You're two people, but you're one in spirit. So that is the idea. Devahuti, her desire to have a child was Krishna's desire to be born of her, manifesting through her. Krishna understood Kardama Muni to be his pure, his very, very pure surrendered devotee, and Devahuti to be of the same nature. The Supreme Personality wanted to take birth as her child. So how does he do it? He awakens within her heart a desire to have a child. And therefore Kardama Muni made a wonderful arrangement with an aerial mansion, and he had 9 daughters first and married them to great rishis, and eventually Lord Kapila Dev appeared through the womb of Devahuti. And after he grew up just a little, Kardama Muni, to show an example to the world, he had done his job. He took care of his wife and his family, raised his child. Now his child was somewhat grown up. So he entered into the forest to perform tapasya, vanaprastha. Because the purpose of life is self-realization. It is not just maintaining material relations and comforts until we die. So he entered into the forest. And here was Devahuti, alone with this boy. And the boy was about to leave to the forest. Yes? He was about to leave to the forest after some time. So he instructed his mother in a very, very deep scientific understanding of the philosophy of Sankhya. And the verse we're going to read today was Devahuti's great appreciation for her son's mercy, and also her astonishment of the Lord's greatness. Satvam vritome jatare nanata katam nuyasyo dara etadasit vishvam yugante vatapatra eka shete smamaya shishur angripanaha. Devahuti speaks. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. Oh, my Lord, how is that possible for the Supreme One, who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation? The answer is that it is possible. For at the end of the millennium, you lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just as a small baby, you lick the toe of your lotus foot. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At the time of dissolution, the Lord sometimes appears as a small baby lying on a leaf of a banyan tree, floating on the devastating water. Therefore, Devahuti suggests, your lying down within the abdomen of a common woman like me is not so astonishing. You can lie down on the leaf of a banyan tree and float on the water of devastation as a small baby. It is not very wonderful. It is not very wonderful, therefore, that you can lie down in the abdomen of my body. You teach us that those who are very fond of children within this material world, who therefore enter into marriage to enjoy family life with children, can also have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their child. And the most wonderful thing is that the Lord Himself licks His toe. Since all the great sages and devotees apply all energy and all activities in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there must be some transcendental pleasure in the toes of His lotus feet. The Lord licks His toe to taste the nectar for which the devotees always aspire. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead wonders how much transcendental pleasure is within Himself. And in order to taste His own potency, He sometimes takes the position of tasting Himself. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna Himself, but He appears as a devotee to taste the sweetness of the transcendental mellow in Himself, which is tasted by Shrimati Radharani, the greatest of all devotees. Devahuti is speaking this expression from her heart before the Lord. That how is it possible that the Supreme Absolute Truth can take birth within the womb of an ordinary woman? We have been discussing how Yashoda Mai, when she heard that Krishna had eaten dirt, she looked within Krishna's mouth, and what did she see? Krishna actually did eat dirt, but He didn't want Yashoda Mai to chastise Him. So therefore, she said, he said, look in my mouth and see if I've eaten dirt. My friends are lying against me.
Yashoda said, lying? Balaram is standing right before you.
Balaram, he is telling me that you've eaten dirt, along with your other friends. There's no possibility that they would lie. They don't want to see me beat you. Yes, open your mouth. I want to see. And he opened his mouth, and she looked inside. She was holding his hand to make sure he didn't run away. That was her love. She was holding Krishna's hand, chastising him, thinking that if he might run away. But he cannot run away if I hold his hand. Opened his mouth, and she looked inside. And Krishna had to arrange something so wonderful inside that she would forget all about this complaint that he ate dirt. Yes, this is his Leela. Now, Mother Yashoda was very much in anxiety due to her motherly love. How will Krishna remain healthy? How will he survive if he's eating dirt? She said to Krishna, I make you so many sweetmeats, and I give you so much butter and yogurt and so many nice things I'm preparing all day for you, everything you want. Why? Isn't this good enough for you? Why are you going to a secluded place to eat dirt? So she was very much in anxiety for her child. Now, Krishna said, I didn't eat dirt. But that did not relieve her anxiety. So Krishna would have to do something more special. And he did, to make her forget about this dirt allegation. She looked in his mouth, and what did she see? The entire universal creation. She saw mountains and oceans and demigods and all living entities, and she saw the personification of the three modes of material nature. She saw this all species of life. She saw time personified. She saw everything. She even saw Vrindavan. And she even saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth, inside his mouth. This is Krishna. Entire universe is within his belly. And at the same time, he's inside his belly, and he's also outside of his belly. Everything is within him, and at the same time, he's within him. This is what Yashoda saw. And she began to become very sincere. And she started to wonder, what am I seeing? How is this possible? She was thinking, is this a dream? Am I dreaming of this? No, it's not. It cannot be a dream because my eyes are wide open. Is this an illusion that the demigods are creating? No, it can't be an illusion. Why would the demigods spend their time putting an insignificant woman like me in illusion? It can't be that. Is it that my mind is deranged? No, my mind is quite stable. That's not the problem. Perhaps it is this. I heard so many times the Brijabasis talking about Garga Muni during Krishna's name-giving ceremony. Garga Muni stated that your son will do supernatural, incredible activities. He is as good as Lord Narayan. Could this be the reason that my child is good as Narayan? Sometimes even the Brijabasis, they wonder about this. How is it that Krishna killed Putana? And then, is it Krishna that killed Trinavarta? Shakatasura? But then she was thinking, no, of course not. It's because Nanda Maharaj and myself have worshipped Lord Narayan with great devotion our whole lives. It's because of that that Krishna has become my child. And because I worship Lord Narayan with so much devotion with my husband, and because my child is innocent, that is why Narayan protected Krishna from Putana, Trinavarta, and Shakatasura. But this idea that my child is as good as Narayan, when there's thunder, my child cries and runs into my arms and is trembling, and unless I embrace him, he finds no relief from his fear.
And when my child is thirsty or hungry for butter or for milk from my breast, he weeps and cries and begs. And if he doesn't get it, sometimes he becomes angry. Gopis have complained to me that when Krishna cannot find their butter in his hunger, he becomes angry and breaks all the pots in their house. And sometimes even passes urine on their floor. Is this Narayan? Of course not. Krishna's completely dependent on me. He's my child. He's helpless. Therefore, whatever Garga Muni said, I don't understand these things. So what am I seeing within his mouth? I'm seeing the entire universal creation. I don't understand how it is possible that it could all be within his belly. So what does a devotee do when something in their life is just inconceivable? They can't understand how this is happening, why this is happening. They simply take shelter of the Supreme Lord, Narayan. So in this state, Yashoda Mai just took shelter of Lord Narayan. I am yours, O Lord. It is by your mercy that all these things are happening. I don't understand it. My Lord, everything is yours. You are the cause of all causes. You are the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything. Under illusion, I am thinking that I am the wife of Nanda, Brajendra. And therefore, I am the queen of all of Vrindavan. And all of Vrindavan is my property. And all the gopis and gopas are my subjects. Under illusion, I'm thinking like that. But actually, everything is yours. Under illusion, I am thinking that Krishna is my son. And I'm thinking that I'm protecting Krishna. I'm thinking that Krishna needs me. But this is an illusion. You are the supreme protector of all living beings. She was praying in this way. And Krishna, understanding her present state, he was thinking, who is going to embrace me and cuddle me affectionately and feed me the milk from her breast if she's thinking that everything's happening by the mercy of Narayan? So when Krishna thought like this, by his yoga maya potency, Bhaktivatsal, he manifested a certain affection toward Yashoda, and that affection awakened such motherly love in her heart that she completely forgot everything she saw in his mouth. It just meant nothing to her anymore. Krishna's my helpless child. And she just took Krishna on her lap and fed her milk. That is Vrindavan Leela. So yes, the whole universe is in the belly of the Lord. The expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the plenary portion of Krishna is Karunodakshayi Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. And what is his nature? He's so great that he's lying down in the yoga nidra, in the causal ocean. And he's basically in mystic sleep. And in his sleep, he just exhales. And from his exhalation, all the universes within the cosmic manifestation come out of his body. Haribo. Now, what happens when you sleep and you breathe? It's no big deal. Some of you may snore and just create a disturbance. And others, you don't do anything. Yes? But here the Lord in his mystic sleep is creating everything in the cosmic manifestation. That's God. If someone claims, I am God, then just watch and see what happens when he goes to sleep. I met one mystic yogi once, and we were in a conference together. We actually became friends. And he was doing all these mystical powers. He was just he was really a yogi. He had some siddhis, little cities.
So he would just
open his hand and go like this and close it, and then there would be a Rudraksha bead, and he'd give it to you. And then he'd close his hand and open it and then sprinkle ashes on the Rudraksha bead.
So he was
like that. And we were sitting next to each other in this one conference. And I kind of looked in his pockets to see if there were any Rudraksha beads that he was... There was no Rudraksha. He actually knew how to do these things.
But he fell asleep.
Even mystic yogis fall asleep during class. What to speak of devotees. Someone was given a class and he was snoring so loud. And other people were looking back at him like, looking at me like, tell him to stop snoring, I can't hear. So here he is, a great mystic yogi. And when he goes to sleep, he just creates disturbance.
Yes?
But the Mahavishnu, when he falls asleep, all universes come out of his body. And when he inhales, devastation of everything. Everything enters into his body to become unmanifested. Simply by his glance, he impregnates material energy with all the jivatmas, all the living entities whose karma is to take birth in the material existence. That is his power. Aham bija pratapita. When a man and this woman wants to have a child, they go through a whole process. And maybe one child, maybe two, maybe three. But Lord Vishnu, what is his power? Inconceivable, unbelievable. Just a second's glance. And he impregnates Mother Nature with every living entity within the cosmic man, not just within the universe, within the whole material existence. It's billions of universes. All living beings are impregnated within a second glance. And some atheists say, oh, this is all mythology, because of their very, very small minds. Prabhupada called that logic the logic of the frog in the well. Yes? The friend of the frog comes and says, I have seen the Pacific Ocean. And the frog says, oh, is it as much water as in my well? You don't understand, frog. Dr. Frog, Professor Frog, you don't understand. It's a lot of water. Oh, twice as much? Twice as much water as my well? Three times? So because of our conditionings, we have a very relative conception that reality must be according to who we are and what we have experienced in life. But when we are talking about the supreme absolute truth, all of these relative barriers of possibilities are completely transcended. Why is God God? Because he is abhigya and swarat. He is not only all-knowing, he can do anything. There is nothing that God cannot do. So sometimes atheists say, oh, if there's nothing that God cannot do, then could God create an object that he cannot lift up? If he can't do that, then he can't do everything. Yes, you have heard this logic before. Very common. And the atheistic people think that they're so intelligent. Yes? But actually, we've heard it so many times before. Devotees who are preachers. Sometimes we're walking in America or in Europe or in Russia, and someone will come and they think that they're inventing some joke that's so unique. And they'll look at a devotee with a shaved head and say, why don't you get a haircut? Just see what a great joke I have made. But we've heard it at least 1,000 times wherever we go in the world. Or they see a dhoti and they say, nice dress you have on. And they look amongst their friends like, what an original comical author he is. But nothing's original in this world. Puna punas charavata charavananam. Everything in this world is chewing that which is already chewed.
It's all old stuff. So, where was I?
Ah, yes, the object. So the atheists challenge, and they think that they're very intelligent. If the Lord can do anything, can he create an object that he cannot lift up? If he cannot create an object that he cannot pick up, then he can't do everything. And if he can't pick up the object, then he can't do everything. Yes? Does that make sense?
So Prabhupada said, yes, the Lord can pick up an object that he can't pick up, and then he'll pick it up. Krishna can do everything, anytime, in any way. That is the absolute truth.
So, here is Mahavishnu. All the universes are coming out of his body.
And Devahuti is expressing, but that same source of Mahavishnu has appeared as a child from my womb. That is the inconceivable glory of the Lord. And what's most wonderful is that Lord of all lords. First, he creates the entire process of devastation of universes.
Now, the Bhagavatam describes in the 12th canto, Markandeya Rishi,
he wanted to live a long time.
Yes? He got a benediction to live a long life, and he really regretted that after some time. Because to live a long life, you have to see what goes on. Yes? He got a benediction to live several kalpas. So he lived, and then it was time for devastation. Hare Krishna. Markandeya Rishi, all of a sudden, you know, he's living in his hermitage, just not worrying about death or old age or any of this stuff. And then all of a sudden, the clouds of devastation, the Samvataka clouds, the clouds that come at the time of devastation. Black clouds, not like these little insignificant Bombay monsoon clouds. Sometimes, I don't know if it happened this year, but most years, at least once or twice a year during monsoons, the whole city is paralyzed. Yes?
Just torrential rains, and the airport closes, and the railway tracks close, and the buses close, and the streets become like little rivers, and nobody can drive on it, and everyone just stays home, and the children are happy because they don't have to go to school. Well, what is that? That's just a little trickle of water. But the clouds of devastation, when they start raining, it is actually torrential. Just within moments, thunder and lightning and profuse rains like pillars are just pouring to the ground and just crushing. And not only does it flood the whole earth, but practically everything's underwater. Everything is underwater. There's no land anywhere to be seen. All the lower planets and the Earth planet are just submerged in this massive ocean of devastation. Literally, it is the ocean of devastation. And what kind of waves are in that ocean of devastation? Just pounding, tossing waves. And Markandeya Rishi is just in that ocean. There's no food. There's no land. There's nothing anywhere to be seen. There's just water. And the water's
pounding. These waves are just crushing his body, crushing him and crushing him. One wave just pushes him down deep into the water, and then another wave pushes him up. And then another one pushes him down. Another one pushes him up. He's just being battered again and again and again. And then he sees Timangila fish coming swimming around him. Timangila fish are so big in this ocean of devastation that they eat whales the way you may eat a chickpea. What is chickpea? Chana. One single chana. For a Timangila fish, a whale is like a chana. Huge fish, and they're very fearful with big, sharp teeth. And I'm they're roaring. And Markandeya Rishi's being surrounded by Timangila fish and massive waves, and it's freezing cold, and there's lightning, and there's thunder. How many of you want the benediction of long life? The realization came to him that long life in this material world is not really a benediction at all. Sukadev Goswami said, better one moment of full consciousness of Krishna than long, long life. Recently, I was in Oregon with Shamsundar Prabhu, our dear godbrother and secretary for Srila Prabhupada in the 70s. And he brought me into this wilderness. He's very adventurous. I went to visit his house, and he said, let's take a walk. So we took a walk. First he drives, then we walk and we into this deep jungle in Oregon. And then we're walking and walking, we see this big sign, you are now entering into the wilderness. So we kept walking in the wilderness, and it was the wilderness. And we walk for hours and hours and hours. And then he takes out these little sleeping bags and says, we'll sleep here tonight. No tent, no house, nothing. Wilderness means there's nothing there. So we're just sleeping under these trees in the sky, and it's cold, and we're sleeping, trying to sleep at least. And we're just drinking water from the streams. And then he's showing me some of these trees, gigantic trees. And because he's a natural person, he really knows the science of the forest. He was telling me just by looking at the bark that this tree is 3,000 years old. Really big trees. I haven't seen such big trees in India. 3,000-year-old trees. In Northern California, there's trees that are 5,000 to 7,000 years old, redwood trees. But I was looking at that tree. I actually started talking to the tree. I said, my dear sir, or Mataji, I don't know, really. I wasn't going to ask Shamsundar the intimacies. I was thinking, my dear sir or Mataji, Prabhu or Mataji, you're 3,000 years old. But I'm not so impressed. What have you done these 3,000 years? You've been here through practically all of modern history. You've been standing here. So Shukadev Goswami describes like this. Long life in the material world is not a great thing. What is great is the quality of our life. One moment of consciousness of Krishna is worth millions of years of surviving in this world. And Markandeya Rishi could testify to this fact. Yes, he had a long life. But the benediction appeared to him at this point like a curse.
It was like a curse. There he was, all alone. The only association he had was Tim and Gillifish and other gigantic aquatics. And there was just no relief. Just being pounded by these waves and freezing by the cold. No rest. Can you imagine? To live for tens and thousands of years in such an ocean. But then, because he was a devotee, something special happened. He happened to see from a distance a little piece of land with a banyan tree. Now, the greater the need, the more you can appreciate something. Yes? If you just eat a big feast and someone gives you a chapati, are you really grateful to that person?
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, but no thanks. But if you're starving and someone gives you a chapati, oh, Prabhu, thank you very much, thank you. You really appreciate, really appreciate. The simplest things become so wonderful when you're desperate. Yes? Can I tell you a personal story? It's Maya, but I'll tell you anyway because it reveals my condition. Years ago, when I was traveling like a sadhu in India, I was on a third-class train going to some pilgrimage site. And I'll never forget this incident. It really, to this day, I remember it. I won't tell you what I feel until after I tell the story. That train was so crowded, and it was going long distance. It was about 20 hours. I was on this train, and it was hot, and I was being crushed. In those days, the third-class trains had no bars, so people would just jump through the windows, and every seat was not only filled, but every seat was filled with layers. There were people on the seats and people on the laps of the people on the seats and people on the laps of the people on the laps who were on the seat. And then there was the luggage rack. And that, for a desperate traveler, that luggage rack was like the penthouse suite. People would, that I always tried to give a luggage rack place because the seats were always full. And the aisleways were always full. And the space and the floor between the seats were always full. So you climb up to these luggage racks and you just squeeze in. And, oh, it's so nice, so nice. But on this particular train, the luggage racks were completely packed, crowded. There was no place to breathe. There was no place to move. I was just hours after hours, and I was so tired, but I couldn't sit, and I couldn't lay. And even if I tried to fall asleep standing, every 3 seconds, someone's elbow would crush your face. Yes? Very difficult. So I was suffering a lot. And I prayed. I didn't know who God was exactly, but I prayed to God, please, save me. And then something wonderful took place. Would you like to hear? I saw underneath one of these third-class benches, underneath the seat, there was a little bit of empty space. It was filthy dirty, because those trains were not cleaned. There was thick coating of just dirt and grease and everything else on that floor. And there was all kinds of rubbish. Yes? But to me, it was like Swargaloka. It took me quite a while to just crush through the people to get to that place.
And I was really afraid somebody else might take it before I got there. I was just squeezing and squeezing and squeezing, and I got through this person, I got to pass this person, because everyone's crushed together. And finally, I just go down, and I get down there. And with my hands, I just clean the rubbish a little off to the side. And it's just a little bit of space, and I laid down. My face against my my head against my arm, and my legs were curled up, because it was just a little space. And on one side of me, from the back side, people were kicking me. And on the front side, because I went under the seat, anytime anyone moved their feet sitting on it was kicking me. But it didn't matter. I was laying down, and I was thinking, this is true opulence. I appreciated that little place more than I ever appreciated a bed or anywhere I ever slept in my whole life, because I was never so desperate to lay down and go to sleep. Yes? I grew up in a nice house in America where I had my own bed in a very, very... I lived in a very quiet village where there was no noise and privacy. Very... But I never appreciated my bed so much. I would just take it for granted. But I was really grateful. I was really, really grateful. I was just thanking God. Thank you. This is true opulence. This is simply wonderful. And I was so comfortable there. Should I continue? The people who were sitting on top of me, they were eating peanuts. And what they were doing is they'd crack open the peanut shells and then throw the shells on me. They'd all fall on my face. I was literally right under them. They'd fall right on my face, the peanut shells. And then the way they were eating the peanuts is they take the peanut itself, and they just kind of, with their thumbs, they scratch off that little skin, and then they blow it. And the whole family was eating peanuts. It wasn't just one person. It was a whole family of peanut eaters. And there was just shells constantly coming on me. And then they'd blow these skins, and the skins would just come. And it was like being, for me, in my desperate condition, I was so grateful for that little place that I was thinking that those peanut skins just being blown into my face were like flower petals showering from the demigods. So the experience I had there, which is very valuable, is you appreciate something according to how much you're really grateful, and you're grateful when you understand the need. You can't really appreciate or be grateful if you take things for granted. Sometimes Krishna takes things away from us so we can actually appreciate whatever little we have. Otherwise, we see if you have so much, you can't really appreciate anything. Yes? I went to a house of some people recently, and there was this big basement, very wealthy people, and the whole basement was filled with toys and games. There was only one child in the house. There were so many games and so many toys and so many things to play with. I couldn't believe it. There was literally thousands. It was a very wealthy family. It was just mind-boggling. How could one child enjoy so many things? Does anything he wants, mommy, get me this, they get it. Mommy, get me that gift. Pretty soon, how many desires, when you fulfill all your desires, you have a whole basement full of your toys? That's material life. And I just didn't see that child was all that happy.
But then I went to another place, simple family, and this little child had no toys, nothing, was playing with a seed from a fruit and was completely satisfied, just completely, just totally thinking of all different ways of playing with this seed from a fruit, an avocado fruit. It's about this big. It's tossing it and talking to it and rolling it and sitting on it and just making, creating all kinds of games with this fruit.
Haribo.
He was more happy. Because if you have so much, you can't really appreciate. If you have just eaten a feast, you don't really appreciate without hunger. That is a fact. So here is Markandeya Rishi. He's in the ocean of devastation. He's already gone thousands of years just being bashed and battered by these waves and being just, and all these monsters roaring at him and looking at him. And still he has tens and thousands of years till the water dries up. And he sees a little piece of land with a tree. Can you imagine how much he was eager to take shelter of that little piece of land, that little island? Huh? We see trees all the time, we just walk by them. But because he was in desperate need, that tree was a shelter to him. He would do anything to get to that tree, but how to reach it. And then he saw, in the ocean of devastation, lying on one leaf of that banyan tree, was a little baby. The baby had a beautiful blue complexion, lotus eyes, didn't wear any clothes. He was just an innocent little baby sucking on his toe. What an amazing situation. Markandeya Rishi is one of the greatest mystics that have ever lived. And he's just suffering miserably in the ocean of devastation. And here in that same ocean is a little baby who's just effortlessly smiling and sucking on his toe on a banyan tree leaf, completely unaffected by everything around him. And Markandeya Rishi was so attracted to this little baby. It was Krishna. He was so attracted to baby Krishna. He just looked at Krishna and took shelter of Krishna. And then Krishna, he just inhaled, yes? And all of a sudden, Markandeya Rishi goes, he just flies right into Krishna's mouth and ends up in his belly. Yes. And then he sees the entire cosmic manifestation in the belly of this child. It's just unbelievable. And then Krishna goes, and he flies out and he's back into the ocean of devastation. Krishna gave him shelter. And ultimately, Markandeya Rishi surrendered. And by the grace of Krishna, everything disappeared and he was back in his ashram again. Yes? And everything was very... But what realizations he got. It is an important lesson. In the process of trying to execute our service to the Lord, many devastating experiences will come in our life. Advaitacharya told Lord Chaitanya that, yes, actually Advaitacharya told Lord Chaitanya, you shouldn't go to Jagannath Puri now. There's too many dangerous tribes of kingdoms fighting with one another, and there's dacoits and thieves and murderers. You should wait until a more peaceful time when there's no so many obstacles. And Lord Chaitanya spoke very boldly. He said, I will go now. When will there ever be a time in this material world where there is no obstacles? I will go today. Our tendency is to procrastinate before we surrender. When things are right, when everything's settled down according to my plan,
Then I'll become very serious about bhakti and taking shelter of the Lord. But that day will never come. There will always be obstacles. That's Maya's business, to keep you procrastinating, to keep you putting it off birth after birth after birth after birth.
So Advaitacharya said, yes, my Lord, obstacles are always your servants. The obstacles that come in our path, however inconceivable they may be, however devastating they may be, they're actually, for a devotee, they help us to sincerely and helplessly take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada is explaining herein how great devotees, they surrender everything to taste the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord. Yes? We read within the holy scriptures and within the histories, people give up their homes. Yes? It was a tradition in certain parts of India just one or two generations back that a father, after his children are raised and grandchildren are raised and things are somewhat stable, then they would just walk to Badrinath and never come back. You have heard about this? This was tradition. They would just say goodbye to the family, and the family knew, we will never see him again, because no one walks to Badrik Ashram and comes back. They were leaving everything behind to completely take shelter in total dependency on the Supreme Absolute Truth. And so many millions and millions of people have done this. Sannyasis, they renounced all the pleasures of the world to take shelter, to taste the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord. Great Babajis and ascetics, and even proper Grihastas, they have so much facility to enjoy sometimes, but they remain very, very simple, just to take shelter of tasting the lotus feet of the Lord. And of everyone, the supreme most renunciates were the Braj Gopis. When Krishna played upon his flute under the Bamsiba tree, the fifth note, which was the love in his heart being expressed through his breath, through the holes of his flute, the love of his heart took sound vibration and entered into the atmosphere. And when Krishna's love in the form of the fifth note of his flute entered into the gopis' hearts, it conquered them. They left their families. They left their children. They left their morality. They left their social position. They left everything and just ran to the forest simply to offer their lives for the satisfaction of Krishna. There is no surrender, there is no renunciation that can ever equal to that of the gopis, because it was done with pure, unalloyed love. Their hearts were simply uncontrollably burning with the fire, the unquenchable fire, to please Krishna through their service. That is love. That is the ultimate ecstasy of the soul. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the crest jewel of all sannyasis, he taught the world that there is no love that can ever equal the love of the Vrindavan gopis. The quality and quantity of their ecstatic, selfless surrender is like no one else.
There is the story when Krishna had headache. He said, bring the dust of the feet of my devotees to put on my head.
The sages and the scholars would not give their dust because they knew to put our feet on Krishna's head means we go to hell. But the gopis just scraped all the dust they had and said, bring it immediately.
Huh?
Do you know what will happen if I put the dust of your feet on Krishna's head? Yes, we will go to hell. But we do not mind going to hell for the rest of eternity if we can give Krishna pleasure even for 1 second. That is love. That is selfless love. So what the devotees are willing to do to taste the nectar of the feet of Krishna. And what does it mean to taste the nectar of the feet of Krishna? The acharyas explain that the lotus feet represent humbling oneself completely to become servant. To approach the feet of someone means to become the servant, the most humble, menial servant. That's what it's about. Anyone can touch someone's feet. That's not a great thing, but it doesn't mean much of anything. To really take shelter of the feet means to take shelter of being the humble servant. Feet represents service. So yes, great personalities are willing to abandon and surrender everything and anything to serve the Lord in taking shelter of his lotus feet. And what is the taste of that service? Bhakti. And in its fully developed state, bhakti becomes prema, or pure love. The taste of love of God is supreme because Krishna reciprocates with the quality of our desire to serve him and awakens ecstasy within our hearts. But devotees are not concerned with the ecstasy. They're concerned with the service. One devotee was fanning Krishna, and he was just looking at Krishna, and Krishna was so beautiful that he was in ecstasy seeing Krishna, and tears began to just fill his eyes, and he started condemning his ecstasy. Because the tears were so much in his eyes, he couldn't see Krishna properly to fan him. I'm not here to enjoy fanning Krishna. I'm here to be enjoyed. To the degree we don't care about our own ecstasy, we only concern with Krishna's pleasure, Krishna reciprocates and gives us ecstasy. To the degree we're concerned with our own happiness, we have to suffer because it's selfish. To the degree we put aside even the conception of our own happiness to make Krishna happy, we become happy. Harivo. This is a logic that's impossible to understand by material intelligence. It can only be understood when one receives the mercy of the Lord. When we want our own happiness, we can't find it. When we give up our search for happiness for the purpose of giving Krishna happiness, we get supreme happiness. That is the reciprocation of love. That is pure devotional service. Many people translate bhakti as devotion. But Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they translated bhakti in a very practical way. Because what is the meaning of devotion? Devotion is expressed through our eagerness to serve. Therefore, Prabhupada translated bhakti as devotional service, to serve with the devotion. That is our eternal constitutional position, and it is the perfection of the soul's existence. So the devotees, they're willing to give up their egos, to give up their selfishness, to give up even their lives, just to serve the lotus feet of Krishna
and to taste the nectar of those lotus feet.
Krishna told Braj Gopis that you have given up everything for me. Even with everything within the universes of Brahma, I do not have enough to repay you for the love you're giving me. This is profound. Krishna, who is the proprietor of all the spiritual and all the material worlds, is telling the gopis that I have nothing. I do not have enough to repay you for the love, the sacrifice that you're offering me. So please be satisfied with that love in itself. So Krishna, he is wondering that the great souls, they do everything and anything and surrender all the most difficult things to taste the nectar of my lotus feet. Krishna's wondering, what is it that they're tasting? I want to taste that too. Krishna is actually thinking that my devotees have something more than me. In their love for me, they have something so special. I want to taste that. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described that Krishna is thinking about the supreme most devotee, the supreme reservoir of all love. Wherever there is love, it is only part and parcel of Sri Radha's love. So he's thinking that I am Rasaraj. I am the reservoir of all pleasure. I am the king of all loving exchanges. But yet, when Srimati Radharani sees me, she experiences tens of millions of times more pleasure than I even know of. This is how love conquers the object of love. I want to taste Radharani's love. I want to understand the nature of her love. I want to understand what it is, what kind of feeling she has when she sees me and serves me. Therefore, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Krishna takes the form of Lord Chaitanya to taste the sweet nature of his own devotee, Srimati Radharani's love. And as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he manifested such ecstasies. Krishna tasting Radharani's love. When he was dancing at the Ratiyatra, tears were shooting from his eyes like syringes. His body was transforming into different colors. Sometimes the joints of his limbs would be separated by 12 inches all over his body. Sometimes in his ecstasy he would be lighter than cotton, and other times he would be heavier than the earth. Yes, the Lord wants to taste the love of his devotees. And what is it that the Lord wants to taste? How the devotees are tasting him, the reservoir of all sweetness, beauty, and love. So in order to do this, if Narayan, the king of Vaikuntha, starts sucking on his toes, it's not his ras. It's not his mood. So the Supreme Absolute Truth takes the form of an innocent little infant baby. Because baby, when they suck their toes, everyone thinks, oh, very nice, very nice. But others are not supposed to suck their own toes. Yes? So he takes the form of a little baby just to taste the nectar of devotional service that his devotees are willing to do everything and any for to, and anything to achieve. This is the greatness of devotional service. And there's something even greater than that. Lord Vishnu says to the four Kumaras on the gates of Vaikuntha that the reason why all desires are fulfilled by taking shelter of my lotus feet, it's because I serve my devotees. Because I serve my devotees, by the blessings of my devotees, I have the power to bless people and fulfill their desires. Krishna gives all credit to his devotees for the powers he has. This is the nature of his love. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna so happily washed the lotus feet of Sudama Vipra, who was a poverty-stricken Brahmin who didn't even have food to eat. And here, in the palace of Dwarka, the Lord is washing his feet and sprinkling that water upon himself. The Lord is eager to be the servant of his servants. And Lord Chaitanya taught this principle. Gopi Bharatur Patakamalayora Dasa 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 Anudas. The highest aspiration one can pray for, higher than even tasting the sweetness of Krishna's feet, is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant who's tasting the sweetness of serving his lotus feet. And as followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is our aspiration. This is our goal in life. To have the humility and the sincerity to be accepted as the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And in that state of consciousness, Krishna reciprocates and gives us the highest sweetness of spiritual love. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, they came with this gift, the greatest of all treasures. Vasu Ghosh prays, what would have become of me in the age of Kali if Lord Chaitanya didn't come to give this gift? And the gift is so easily accessible. We just need to purify our heart of all desires and actually realize and be grateful for the opportunity to serve. As we become grateful for the opportunity to serve, we develop an eagerness, a deep taste to hear about Krishna, and a great enthusiasm to come together with the Vaishnav devotees to fill the whole universe with Krishna's glory by loudly chanting the holy name. By this chanting of Harinam, the heart is cleansed and Krishna becomes pleased with us. And then what we see Gopal doing today, eagerly enjoying sucking his toe, when Krishna is pleased by our Vaishnav Seva, our showing compassion to others, and when Krishna is pleased by seeing us gaining an attachment and an attraction and enthusiasm to chant his names, then what does he do? What he's tasting today, the nectar of his own lotus feet, he will share that nectar with us. That's what he's doing today. Gopal is publicly sucking on his toe. And he's inviting everyone in the temple today that this is so much nectar. I want to share it with you. The Lord descends to share that nectar with us. And he's teaching us how we can taste that nectar. Through offenselessly, with humility and devotion, chanting the holy name. And as the Lord descends to share the nectar of his lotus feet with us, what pleases him most? When we not only take shelter of hearing and chanting his glories and serving Vaishnavas, but when we help in his mission and make great efforts to assist in sharing that nectar with others. Through distribution of Prabhupada's books, we are trying to help the Lord give the nectar of his lotus feet to the people in this world. Through Harinam Kirtan, through having wonderful temples, through our example in life, in every respect, we want to attract everyone to those lotus feet. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam punam ratasvadanam. And by inducing people to take shelter of Harinam, Krishna's name, we can perform that very intimate, confidential service, assisting the Lord in spreading the nectar of his lotus feet into so many hearts. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. At this time, we will taste the nectar of the holy name. Krishna is non-different than his name. By serving the holy name, by chanting sincerely, Namamrita, Hari Namamrita, we can taste the nectar of Krishna. Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's abode, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's associates, and Krishna's love are all accessible to a sincere devotee who takes shelter of his holy name.